Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues. That's the name of this here show on the American Family Radio Network. We do have podcasts available in case you miss our show. You can go to AFR.net and download the podcast daily if you want to. A lot of people do that here at American Family Radio. Fred Jackson's with me. Wesley Wildman's in studio. And now Steve Paisley Jordahl joins us. Good morning, Brother Steve.
Hey, everybody.
What do you got for us, Steve?
Well, I've been kind of watching what's been going on in Turkey. President Trump is sitting down, and he did a little sit-down press conference, took questions from the press that was assembled there, and he just laid into NATO allies for not coming alongside him in or the U.S. in its effort against Iran. Listen to Cut 13.
We did something in Iran. We don't need anybody's help. I didn't even want their help. But before I asked, they said they wouldn't be there. And we've invested trillions of dollars in NATO. Why? To protect European countries and others, Canada, etc., but to protect people, countries from, generally speaking, it used to be the Soviet Union, now it's Russia. And I say that's fine, but you would think that they'd be very willing to do something to help us, and they really weren't. In the case of the United Kingdom, the Prime Minister, I guess he's no longer there, maybe because of this, it was a very unpopular thing he did. He said, no, we'll help after the war is over. I said, I don't need that kind of help. We didn't need any help at all. And in a way, I was testing people. I was testing to see whether or not they'd be there, because I've long said that we help them, but I'm not sure that they'd be there for us. And Italy turned us down, and Germany turned us down, and France turned us down. And it's okay. But, you know, why are we spending hundreds of billions of dollars, and they're not there for us? We've always been there for them.
I'll tell you who was there for us.
Yeah.
Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Huh?
Yes. Absolutely.
If Trump was, Trump should have right there said, you know who was with us? Israel. That's who was with us.
Yeah.
I don't know why he didn't give him credit right there.
Because Erdogan was 6 feet away from him.
Yeah.
What does that matter?
Turkey does not like Israel, and Erdogan does not.
So Trump was intimidated?
Yeah, he wasn't going to say anything.
He was silent. He was silenced by that.
Silent about Israel.
Okay, so listen, I understand what President Trump is saying, and I think that's a sentiment of a lot of people in America, as we talked last hour. So I understand the frustration. I think the lines get a little blurry for me in all this, because NATO, which that's what he's addressing, is designed to be an alliance to stop the Soviet Union or Russia, basically. That's basically why it's created, from attacking NATO countries. Mm-hmm. NATO is made up of a lot of smaller countries, with the exception of Germany, France, and Great Britain. It's basically a lot of countries that now Turkey's a large population. Italy, large population, relatively speaking. But all those countries joined together post-World War II, correct me if I'm wrong on this history, Fred, was it post-World War II? Yes, it was. To basically say we're going to all join together to protect the collective against the Soviet Union, which later broke down and became Russia. So I don't know if NATO was designed to support the United States and Israel going to war with Iran. So I don't know. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't know that it's fair to
hold them,
say to Italy, who is probably elected on Italy first, to say, for Trump to say to Italy, hey, you got to be with us in our war against Iran, or you're against us. Does that make sense?
It does, but what about, I think going to war with them, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I think that the only time this has become a problem with NATO not helping is the Strait of Hormuz. And maybe y'all can add to that.
I agree. The Strait if this were the British Channel, I might could understand it better. But
I think his position, they were saying, hey, listen, the Strait affects everybody. It affects you, it affects us. Can you help us here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's also the fact that the word was from the, I think, both Israeli and American intelligence, is that Iran was at the point of having enough power to send a nuclear weapon into Europe.
Right.
So I think Trump was saying, hey, it's oil, yes, that's part of the equation. But also, Iran doesn't like you, Italy. Iran doesn't like you, Germany.
Yeah, but they have threatened them.
They hadn't. But the question was, why have you developed missiles now, intercontinental missiles, unless you plan to use them?
Well, I don't know. As I say, it's kind of blurry, kind of complicated, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Knowing exactly where to draw the line. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, he went over there hoping to get three things. He wanted to get the NATO countries to increase their defense spending so the United States, they weren't so dependent on the United States. He wanted them to buy into the Iran conflict, which they're not. And according to Bob McGinnis, I got a story running today, the third goal that they had was to kind of put some sunlight between Erdogan and Putin in Russia.
I don't understand that.
Russia and Turkey are aligned. Turkey was a Western ally, and is kind of moving towards its Islamic neighbors. It's an Arab state, a Muslim country, and it is aligning itself with Russia. And Trump wants to draw that, put sunlight there. He wants to distance the relationship between Russia and Turkey, thinking that it would be better if Turkey was more aligned with the U.S. than with Russia. That's just what, according to Bob McGinnis, that's one of the goals that they had.
I got you. Okay. All right, next story.
I got more good news.
Give me some good news, Steve.
A Chinese pastor who had been jailed in China, a pastor of an underground church there, has been released. His name is Pastor Ezra Jin. And he was arrested back in September. He was arrested in October. And when President Trump went to China in November, he brought up his name specifically, Pastor Jin's name, with Chairman Xi. He wanted to say that he wanted him released. And on the 4th of July, China released Pastor Ezra Jin and flew him to the United States to be with his family, they say, as a token of goodwill on July 4th. So
good for China and good for President Trump in working that deal out.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And, you know, I don't know the circumstances, but Wesley, you've traveled to China. Supposedly they have freedom of religion, but only religion
that's controlled
by the government,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's a surprise. That's a great thing. But I am shocked that China agreed to do that.
So this was an underground church, yep, which is illegal.
A large church, yes.
And which real quick in the States would just be another church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Underground church. That means it's hidden. They're trying to hide from the government. So he was caught and imprisoned. Is that right?
He was caught, and they arrested about 30 of his church members. They've released. They still have about, I think, 13 or a number of. Let me think. I have that number here. A number of the staff that are still in prison. They didn't let them all go.
What's his name again? And can we post that story on our Today's Issues Facebook page?
Yeah, Pastor Ezra Jin, and I believe it's at AFN. You can go to AFN.
Or AFN.
But we can
post our story at American Family News on our Today's Issues Facebook page. That way people can pray for this fella.
If we've put it up yet. I'm not sure if it's posted yet.
And his church.
Yeah. So,
you know, those are brave people.
Those are brave people. And
Christians
I wonder,
in China.
Absolutely. I wonder who was the advisor or facilitator to to encourage or to tell Trump that this would be a person that you would want to ask to be released, because that is that would not have most likely not have happened if the other administration was in charge. We could say this every day about a lot of things, but that's a big deal that a Christian was let free in China as a result of President Trump asking for him to be released.
Absolutely.
The president has a lot of spiritual advisors. He's got a council of advisors that meet with him regularly, and among them, I'm sure, are advocates of freedom, religious freedom.
Stephen Miller.
Yep.
He's one of President Trump's biggest assets, in my opinion, in terms of having his ear. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't have been a surprise to me if that's the person who said you need to bring this up with the president of China.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that is good news.
Really, really good
absolutely.
News.
Absolutely. And again, to make sure you appreciate our freedoms here
mm-hmm.
in the United States, the freedom of religion, because they don't have it in communist China.
Could you imagine just for a minute that the church service that you experienced this past Sunday was already turned in the week before and pre-approved by the government?
That's what they have to do.
That's it. Yep. That's their three-self church. That's what they do. They submit it and they get back approval, and you have to read it off.
That's what China calls freedom of religion.
Yep. That's their church. And that the underground church, all they're doing is expressing, listen, we answer to a higher purpose. We answer to God above, not you. And therefore we're going to take our chances of going underground so that we're free to worship in spirit and truth and not at the expense of what order you want to give us.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Next story, Steve.
All right. The dream is over for American soccer fans.
Ah.
United States lost last night to Belgium 4-1.
What happened?
Well, President Trump intervened and got the suspended Florian Balogun back in the game, and he played, but apparently it wasn't enough as Belgium scored their four goals. And beat them to, so the U.S.
Did you watch
out.
This, Steve?
I did not, but I heard about it. They had the fans are looking back fondly on this, though. Let's listen to some of them. Cut eight.
The U.S., what they showed to throughout the entire World Cup, it's been so fun to watch. I've been so united with people that I've never met before in the U.S.
For this World Cup, we did what we can. Mm-hmm. It was a very good game, I can say, but sometimes it is what it is. It's just a bad day. We did very good until now.
We're USA. Like, we say ride or die, guys. Ride or die.
We're coming back in 4 years.
We're coming back in 4 years. We're coming back.
Yeah. I don't know whether they will or not. Hey, by the way, maybe the game isn't completely decided. I heard, first of all, that they still have like 4 weeks to count goals in Los Angeles.
I
think that was in Seattle.
Seattle, yeah.
President Trump is maybe it may not be done intervening. Someone snuck a microphone into the Oval Office and caught this conversation with between Trump and the head of FIFA. This has got nine.
I actually don't think that was a loss. Four goals? I didn't see four goals. It looked more like a tie to me, Gianni. Or maybe a win if we get rid of all these goals. Can you do something about these goals, Gianni? What if we invade Belgium? I mean, when you think about it, that would make us the winner. I don't even think they have an army, to be honest.
That's funny.
Who was that?
That's not an impression. That's just an AI version. Someone asked AI to put a video together of that. And of course, Gianni's talking about is Gianni Infantino, who is the head of FIFA. He's the one that Trump lobbied to get the U.S. striker back in the game last night.
If we invade Belgium? Okay, I'm just gonna express an opinion of basically. It's an informed opinion. I'm not completely ignorant of this subject of soccer in America. But this is one of the – I'm about to rant.
Go.
About a sport I know very little about. I mean, I do know what soccer is, and or football, as they call it in the rest of the world. But somebody tell me how we can continuously have millions of kids playing soccer. We see them every day in our parks all over America. We got 340 million people or whatever it is. I know not all of them play soccer. But let me tell you, millions of young people play soccer every day here in the United States of America. America. Okay? It's America.
It's America.
And we should be number one, okay, or at least top five in the world in soccer. If you base it on the number of kids that play soccer and come up in our system, and here we are every year going, well, we made it to the round of 16. Boy, we're getting somewhere. Maybe 4 years from now we'll make it to the round of eight. No, we just got beat by a country that's about one 25th of our size. Belgium has 12 million people. Guess what? Florida has twice as many people as Belgium has, and they just kicked our rear ends. Again, 4-1, we lost. Again, that is, I'm not saying our guys didn't try as hard as they could. Didn't give great effort. I'm just going, how does a country that has so many soccer, youth soccer players, and we've had, soccer's been big youth for 30 years now at least, and you go, why don't we ever emerge as a power in soccer, Fred?
Here's, this is,
Steve has an answer.
No, go ahead, Fred.
No, I think soccer is big. You're right. I mean, I've been here 30 years.
I mean, you go anywhere
now
in our country, you see soccer fields, they're full of kids.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have the priority of football. In these other countries, soccer is it. I mean, it is the premier sport. It's probably the same reason as to what you're talking about there. Why in the Boston Marathon, it's an Ethiopian that wins all the time. We've got plenty of runners in this country. It's just that certain countries focus on a given sport. And I think in most of the world, if I understand this correctly, soccer is just huge.
Oh, it is, yeah. It is, but still, you would just think sheer numbers we would be able to compete for a championship every time we take the field. Wesley?
I don't have a good answer. I'm seeing it the same way you're seeing it. You think they would be able to hand select towards it, the 10 players?
Out of millions of kids playing soccer in America?
10.
Kids and young adults, and you can't come up with a team that's top four?
Let me ask you guys this question, talking about priorities. How big a priority is soccer at the university level?
Well, it's pretty big.
It's very big. It's like it's similar to hockey and other sports. The more northern you go, the more they prioritize soccer.
Almost every college in America has a male and a female soccer team. Mm. I mean, it's big.
Yeah.
So I would say I don't know how big it is. And obviously, as a fan, as a spectator sport, it doesn't draw the kind of crowds that American football does, for example. But it's still pretty big. Go ahead.
And the other question I thought about is, I wonder if any of our better players are playing for other countries.
Right. Well, that would
we've
be.
We've seen that in the Olympics.
I would call that a traitor.
We've seen it in the Olympics.
Yeah.
There's some.
Anyway, Fred, go ahead, Steve.
The female skier who skied for China, who's an American citizen.
Right.
But her parents are from China, but she was born in America.
Yeah.
So I'm just
curious. I don't know.
Other countries, and FIFA has programs for this, develop players young, and the United States does not. And this is a tweet, this is a post from a guy named Ankash who's, This is a post from somebody I can't vouch for their authority, but what they're saying makes sense here. He wrote, in Germany, a talented 14-year-old earns his club money. In America, his parents pay the club $15,000 a year to let him play and travel with the club. That single inversion explains why "we will not" is the most accurate line ever written about U.S. soccer. FIFA has built a global system training, compensation, and payments sent out of cut of every pro back to the club that developed it for years. So if you are a local club and you develop somebody that gets to be a pro, your club gets money back. And this is the way they develop their young players. They start tracking them around age 12. From age 12 onward, you develop players, and they find the good players and they place them with clubs, and they start the payment system of
okay, you started
funding.
To bore me. Okay,
that's why it's a farm system that the FIFA has.
All right, next story. Thank you, Steve, for that in-depth explanation.
You're welcome.
Why America can't rise to the top in
soccer.
But you tried your best.
I did,
and you did good there for about 90 seconds.
But also after that. But the
Wesley can explain it. Go ahead, Wesley.
That's right. Now, I understand that these players, they come together just for this moment. They play with other club teams.
You're talking about, well, that's soccer. True all over the world, isn't it? Or is that not? You're talking about America,
right.
The American team?
It's, yeah.
Because these players that are playing.
That's what I'm saying. I want to know who's selecting the players, what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Well, they're playing for pro teams. I mean, these are pro athletes playing for pro teams. But, you know, go ahead, Steve. Next story.
All right. When do you think you reach your peak as far as performance of highest levels of psychological functioning?
18, right. Got to be.
Yeah, 18-year-olds. We all know how.
So you said psychological functioning, not athletic.
No, not physical prowess.
Okay, gotcha.
The way you react with the world. It's between 55 and 60, according to what they're finding. A study published in the journal Intelligence finds that your brain does not peak until somewhere between 55 and 60 because of all the experience that you've collected.
That makes sense.
And you're able to apply to life.
Yeah, and then you go downhill.
And then, yeah.
So you gain all this knowledge, you peak, and then you start trending downwards.
Human achievement in domains such as career success tend to peak between 55 and 60 instead of like when you're.
So psychologically, between 55 and 60, you hit your peak. Well,
I would have thought it would have been closer to 40. On the specifics of what they're trying to poll or examine, obviously not physical, it's mental. So I would think closer to 40. I figured by 40 you could have got all you needed to know from a wisdom and understanding how the world works standpoint. But 55 to 60, I guess that's peaking it though, right?
That's what the study found.
Fred's
Uh-oh.
Fred, how old are you, Fred?
I do not accept this. I'm 70 plus.
Wait, is that Fred walking out of the studio? That's Fred walking out.
Yeah, that's Fred. Fred, in the rearview mirror for you is your peak.
Yes.
Okay, you see the summit back there? You're trending down.
Yeah.
But so am I.
Yeah, so me too.
You too? How old are you?
66.
Okay.
So then another way of looking at this, I have a lot of excuses I can make until then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Between 55 and 60. Yeah. So I think your physical peak is.
I think it's 20, 25.
19.
Yeah.
I don't know. So thank you, Steve.
My pleasure.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us on the show today. Steve, I want to thank Steve and Wesley and Fred and Chris Woodward and Brent Creeley and Cole Green, our producer.
And Jenna.
Our producer is Brent Creeley. And Jenna Ellis.
Yeah.
Jenna joined us. And Ash.
Asher.
Asher.
If you want to say it in the Mississippi.
Asher the Redhead.
Asher
the Redhead is doing some work for us here this morning. He's a new on the staff. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.